a time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we're discussing the 2009 Zack Snyder film, Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash from the upcoming Almost Famous Minute.
I'm Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
I'm Rick Ingham from the Mad Max Minute.
I'm Robert Black from Michael Myers Minute.
And I'm Dave Powles from 5 Minutes of Mystery.
Oh man, gentlemen, are you ready to have a good time?
Yeah, we're flying high in this ship.
I just turned the lights off on my end.
You know, I heard there was a secret chord. I hope we get to learn about it today.
Dan, let's talk about religion.
Dan doesn't play the secret chord till next minute.
So this is minute 122, and it starts with Dan and Lori undressing each other and ends with them having sex.
Yeah, that's it. Your Honor, that's what it was.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow for minute 123.
All right, so I'm going to do the first thing I'm going to say is like the classiest, most respectful thing I can say that's happening in these minutes is I was thinking about, you know, as if they got high after doing like this heroic thing. They did their purpose is what I'm trying to get at. And I was like, wait, why do I have this feeling like I felt this type of emotion with a character before? And I was thinking about it's Unbreakable, like Unbreakable. Mm. Because David Dunn's character, he's depressed, he's sad, he has no purpose in life. And then Elijah comes along and says, like, I believe you are meant for great things. And he's denying it. He's like, he's trying to find a way. He's like, no, this is just a crazy man talking to me about crazy stuff. And then at the end of the film, he rescues the children after their parents were killed by the yellow man. And he chokes out the yellow man. And he puts him out, and he rescues the kids, and he comes home, and he just picks up what's her name? Is it Claire Danes?
Princess Bride.
Yes, the actress from Princess Bride. That I can't remember her name right now.
Robin Wright. Claire.
Thank you.
Robin Wright. Thank you. Because Robin Wright, she's also depressed because he's depressed, and they have a whole their marriage is like barely held together, and just like and he just yeah he picks her up and he like. And she looks up at him, and he's got this like soft smile now, and she's smiling, and it hints at like you know they'll go to bed. We're not sure like how like coitus they'll be, but they're clearly going to have like the first actual like be in bed and happy with each other
intimacy,
in a very long time. They're having the first time they're actually like looking at each other, smiling and happy because they had that date night. The kid wanted out, and it was like and all they like talked about was like you know how crazy it was when. You know, I think he was smiling then because they talk about the car crash and stuff. And, you know, that's when you realize he lied because he wanted to be with her more important than being with football. So my point is that it's that line that I think Elijah says where it's like, you know, what if Superman was on Earth and didn't have his power? And he every day he like hated himself because he knew he was meant for greatness. This is the moment with them. It's like they remember we're here for greatness. We're here to help people. We're not here just to kind of mope around, look at the news. So I get that. I get they're like, they're just you know, excited to be with each other, doing heroic things.
Are you saying sex isn't heroic?
You don't look it, kid.
If you're doing it right.
Well, I mean, and now I know we talked about them undressing, but like the amount of like how much their suit is like obviously she has the zipper in the center, and that's cool. But and then he's got probably like and also he's got that big like a beak nose. So the makeout scene is probably he's probably like kind of scratching her cheek when he's like.
That's why I wondered about.
Okay, that's good.
That's my note.
Yeah, and like honestly, like they I know they kind of like there's a few edit cuts to get them into their birthday suits, but like seriously, I think this would be like watching two sweaty janitors take off their overalls. Like if you seriously like just like all right, we're just gonna watch you undress and like all right, well. This usually I usually just take this off back at the lab. I usually don't just take this off like willy nilly. Like I doubt he rides around in Archie like in the buff, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point because we get that one zipper on the front of her costume. We get the one zipper on the back of his costume. But there are gloves, there are sleeves, there are pant legs involved, and we just yada yada right past that so that they can get into the flight chair. And get down to business.
Yeah.
Have you seen Life Stinks, Mel Brooks movie?
Which movie?
Life Stinks. When he and the homeless woman are about to have sex and she's wearing so many layers of clothes because she's homeless. Can't get to her. This should be like that. It should be comedic.
That flew over my 9-year-old head.
Yeah. Now, if you want to do the Naked Gun line about using protection, they wear two life-size condoms. Now I'm all for that.
Yeah.
Well, and they also rip each other's clothes off straight in half, you know, or his at least, right?
We're missing a scene where Dan is awkwardly hopping around trying to pull off one of his boots.
Well, and she, her leggings have like a buckle. Like, it's like, and her clearly her lower garments, they're like tight. Like, that would be like, like, you're going to be like, pants around the ankles thing for a good solid like 4 minutes.
And
they should be covered in like baby powder or something underneath.
Exactly. Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree, Robert.
My exact question in my notes is, are they stepping away from each other in order to do this?
Ooh, probably. I think tomorrow we see that she's still wearing her like thigh high boots.
So I have,
she's
got to
take
that
off everything, you know,
logistics
everything over the boots back on.
Yeah, maybe.
Your Honor, this logistics nightmare.
Once the unzipping happens, there's this moment where I get really creeped out by how much shiny latex is on screen. With her gloves, it reminds me of when Danny DeVito's Penguin puts on his shiny black flipper gloves.
Nice. Mm.
And then, like, just texturally speaking, it's all a bit too much for me with when she kind of pulls her top apart as it's being unzipped. It's just, there's a lot of latex, and I don't know, just it just, like I said, texturally just skews me out a little bit.
That shot is weird too. It's like the close up on her chest as they're unzipping.
Yeah.
And in a normal movie, that would be the moment, like, you pull that open, you're going to get explicit, I assume. And you see her breasts, right?
Sure. Or some
but
serious
then
cleavage.
You don't.
Or...
And I'm like, why was that shot there? Because it seemed incomplete. Like, it should have been, honestly, that's where the shirt comes off.
No, you're
but
right.
Too
it
much
honestly
in the way.
Feels like the first 3/4 of this minute, it has like a little bit of class with it. And then the next minute 25 is, and I'm going to blame Zack Snyder. I'm coming after him. Because you're right, though. I think the first 40 seconds of this minute here is a very good panel to panel, or close to the panel.
Representation.
Of the comic. Now, I'm a little bummed out. We never actually see the lights come off, because I would think you should get the threes. You get the first button. You know, you get the lights. Then you get, you know, because the lights are just off. They make out, lights are auto off. I would have loved it if he, you know, he hits, you know, they're making out, he turns around, he hits a button, lights off, and then you know, hit the button, smoke screen. You know, and then later, you know, we'll get the fire.
Yeah. I do love that the button here for the smoke or fog or you know, it's identical to the book. So I do like that it's a clever move to do this. So.
I mean,
it's a nice detail.
I assume there's been nights back in the old days where him and Rorschach would just do that. They go up, they hit the lights and the smoke, and then Rorschach would crack open the coffee pot and just like mix a cup and just crack his mask open a bit and sit there. And he would just sit there listening to the radio.
That'd be great for police scanning.
Cause you pick up all the transmissions.
It also makes me wonder what other kind of buttons he has on the owl ship. Like, is there a button with a round ball with a bunch of lines in it, and that drops the disco ball? And then there's another button with a music note, and that starts the heavy, bassy music. And then they pull a couple of light sticks out of a compartment, and they just start raving out owl ship.
I agree. I bet you there's so many gadgets he had that in the ship, but, like, every time he'd try to push one of them, Rorschach would have this big monologue about how it's like, you know, against this and that, and the people, they think they're and he gets into that, and he's like, all right, you know what, never mind, Rorschach, I just turn off, never mind. I thought the disco ball was nice, I thought it would be a little atmosphere in here, and Rorschach, you know, he's just going about the dregs, the people, and how we shouldn't say it. It's like, all right, never mind, Rorschach, I'm sorry, you know what, bad idea, bad brought it up, but just put the radio back on.
Say, this ship has so many gadgets, I'm sure the seats have a vibrate function.
Yeah, like, Rorschach, there's a lumbar support there if you want, and like Rorschach's like sitting forward, like complete forward for like an hour, like elbows on knees, sipping coffee, like silently listening just to the police scanner.
Like, I installed a shiatsu massager. You can lean back, bro.
Lean back, Rorschach. Yeah, it's like he has all these gadgets, and Rorschach never only uses the coffee machine. Only uses it. I would assume Rorschach, he stole those like coffee cups from the diner. Like, he pocketed them. Yeah. I brought cups, and he just like puts them in there. I love it.
Yeah, I like it.
But yeah. How about this? Does he talk about how the ship, honest to God, how the ship, like, power-wise runs? Like, does he mention its generator? Is it just off of, like, just a shitload of car batteries? Like, what's the story?
I think it's unicorn dreams and elf farts.
Because if he doesn't say it, yeah, I'm going to say it. Here, everyone get your tinfoil hats out here. Dan figured out zero-point energy box theory, okay? Because that's what runs the UFOs. Just saying it right now.
Do you think that Dr. Manhattan took a shit and Dan put it in a box and that's what powers the owl ship?
I think so, yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
Nibbler fuel.
does Dr. Manhattan ever talk about that? Like him, like, kind of like Tony Starking a new element or something?
I think we talked about the owl ship energy power source. I think I said then that I think that Dan would have been able to create something, maybe with Adrian's help, maybe with Dr. Manhattan's help, but somehow utilizing some of that energy. I think that Dr. Manhattan's energy is kind of powering Archie.
Energy is code.
Energy derived from him.
There's, yeah, I want to, yeah, because I don't want to go, don't send anyone down the rabbit hole. Just that's like the theoretical energy that, like, that's what powers UFOs. Like, that's what they call it zero point energy. And they're just like, it's the thing that's like, it's non, that's the thing is his still is ballistic energy, meaning a rocket pushed it forward. Whereas the theory with, like, UFO crafts is that there's no ballistic energy. Just they zip, they zap, they go here, up, down, dead, up, and they go.
So he's got a ZPM from Stargate. That's clearly not any,
that's not any energy or fuel that we know about.
What'd you say, Robert?
I said, so he's got a ZPM from Stargate.
Yeah, see, like, as I say, I mean, like, we've had stuff like that. I mean, like, I'm trying to think, obviously Star Trek and Star Wars both have ballistic energy. Everything has an engine on it, so... Yeah, I'm trying to think how many actual sci-fi stuff ever shows, you know, a ship using non-ballistic energy. Or ballistic propulsion, I should say. Was it?
Stargate.
All right, yeah. That's like the one sci-fi I know the least about, probably, so...
You nerds do realize that there's a naked lady on screen, right?
Well, before we get to the naked lady on screen...
So I'm fine.
Can we take a quick detour to Second 11?
Let me click that.
I heard that is like third base instead of Second 11.
Sure. Because in Second 11, you get the view of the smoke screen descending down below the owl ship. And we've got a very lovely tableau. This is the type of thing that I would use as a screen background on my PC.
Yeah.
You've got the Empire State Building over there. You've got Vite looming in the background. And you've got the soft blue light of the engines underneath just reflecting off that smoke. And I just love the look of it.
And every time you look at it, you know what's going on inside. So that makes it better.
Yeah.
Those.
I've said it before. The owl ship, I think, is one of the best looking vehicles in comic book. You know, definitely in comic book movies. I think it's one of the best looking vehicles.
Yeah, it's also interesting that even when Dan and Lori are alone, you still have Adrian in the background, just kind of looming.
Yeah, I can't wait for this to show up on Twitter on One Perfect Shot Twitter account.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank God they didn't put the Foley for that latex.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. They also chalkboard.
So we mentioned baby powder earlier. Commando is a bold choice when you're wearing head-to-toe latex.
Yeah, that'd be like pulling off the cheapest Halloween costume, the amount of like just heat that your body just like... You gotta breathe.
Yeah, there needs to be a shower in here before they.
And I believe he has one installed. I believe he has a. I bet you he has a half shower built.
Yeah.
Half bathroom built in that thing.
He installed it and then tried to convince Rorschach to use it, and Rorschach was like, "No time, Only justice.
You smell like trash, Rorschach. God, man, come on.
Justice smells like trash.
What do you do?
How are you going to sneak up on people in the dumpster? Like trash.
Yeah, you put your clothes in a dumpster?
Yes.
How'd you know my secret spot?
Yeah.
Yeah, he gets really paranoid. No, dude, you seriously smell like the back of a deli. Yeah.
We cut to, let's see, so.
Malin Ackerman is a gorgeous woman, and then we have Patrick Wilson's dad face. That's what your note was, I know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, I want to say, like, the once the mounting begins, they have them framed kind of in front of one of Archie's, you know, eye windows with the moon kind of between them. And so we have just the two of them kind of softly lit with some blue lighting and the moon right between them. It's probably not an incredibly original sort of shot, but I do like the this look of them looking down at each other, and then away we go.
You know, Patrick Wilson, yes, he has a dad face, but I'm looking at just how much distance Malin Ackerman is covering, and all I can say is good on you, Dan. Good on you. Good job, bud. Not that he did anything to help that, but you know.
But you guys agree with me though, up until 40, like second 40, like I feel like all these shots are really good, and then it's like Snyder told his cinematographer, hey man, why don't you break for lunch? And he's like, yeah, we're good. We're filming. Yeah, we're done filming. You're cool, man. And then he's like, good. Now I get to just show everything. Like because
the wide shot.
Because this wide shot does it. It because up until that moment, I feel like it's a good. Like I said, you kind of hold back. We don't show everything, and you let your imagination and the comic kind of like, yeah, I get it. Like they're having this romantic evening, and then it gets wide shot, and now it's like. Now it just looks like I'm watching people have sex. Yeah. And now it feels like I'm a pervert and I'm in the back of the ship peeping on people. Like it goes from like that close cinematic, they're framed perfectly, to like wide shot just, oh, you guys, hey, you guys, like God forbid, thank God another one of the kids like from the apartment snuck on the back of the ship because he wanted to see heroes because now he sees too much. You know, like still thank in God. There.
When, like you said, when you cut to that wide shot, it changes into a softcore cable porn type shot that, you know, it seems like that fake sexual movement acting that is, it just doesn't feel right.
You know, I'll say two things about this wide shot. That's one, the way that Snyder frames the moon and how it nests right into the small of Malin Ackerman's back is very good framing.
Yeah.
But also, I find it interesting. Lori gets on to Dan and he instinctively puts his hand on her backside and she takes his hand off of her and onto the chair as if to say, no touching, just let me do my thing for a second.
Mm. Huh.
She's been having sex with a giant omnipotent smurf for God knows how long. And she just wants to, you know, do her thing for a second, let her get where she needs to be. Yeah. And then we can start getting creative.
So like Manhattan is the controlling entity in that relationship.
Hmm. Now it's her turn to be at the wheel, so to speak.
Huh. That's a good point. And the fact it's like, she can't have the dark intimacy, you know, just like the moonlight, like lighting them. It's like he just freaking glows blue, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like it'd be like if you're looking down at your pillow and there's just a flashlight the entire time, like in your face, you know? Like I can't relax. I can't. It's just this gaudy blue light looking at me. And then, you know, like right at the beginning, Dan's kind of like almost in a shock, like, oh boy. Oh boy, like we're doing it, you know? But Dr. Manhattan would have even of a less of emotion of just like, is this pleasing you, Lori? And you're just stop with the, you're making me metatextually think about like my soul and humanity right now. I'm just trying to have a good time.
All right. Now I'm glad you brought up Dr. Manhattan glowing blue because I have a blue light filter setting on my phone.
So because Zack Snyder,
you know, if I'm going to use my phone in the evening, I don't want to be bombarded with blue light. I want to have just the red filter on. That way it makes it easier for me to sleep. So if she is living with a walking embodiment of blue light, that has got to wreak havoc on just trying to fall asleep.
But then there's the scene when he shows up to the TV news show studio. And they ask him, "Are you going to be that bright and blue the whole time? can you dim yourself?"
Yeah, but I don't think Lori wants to constantly be asking him to hue shift for her.
Yeah,
be like, "Hey, you know, when you come home, dial it back a few shades."
It's still blue. Like, if anything, she'd be like, "Can you just look like a human for tonight?" Like, that's like you're asking, like, rather than instead of a fresh glow stick, can I have a glow stick after 6 hours? Like, it's still an unnatural color to be looking at.
You got to be like Iceman's mom in X-Men 2. Yeah. Be like, have you ever tried just not being blue?
But there's something that in this wide shot that we're still sort of on around the between. Like seconds 40 to 49-ish. It's, you know, as she's moving, there's always something that has looked very fake to me about her ass. And you know, I only noticed for analytical purposes, but
of course,
it looks as if her actual butt is either CGI'd or it's airbrushed digitally, or they've painted in her butt crack, you know. It just looks unnatural for some reason. Like, maybe she had on some kind of modesty thing, but
yeah.
I don't think that would be the case, because just something that I read about, Malin Ackerman was talking to, I think it's the Daily Mail, about nudity. And she said, you know, "I'm not embarrassed about taking off my clothes for a film as long as it's not gratuitous. I spent a lot of time as a child in Sweden. It's natural there." And then she says, "I don't know many women who go to bed with their husband at night to have sex and leave their bra on. So let's make it real in the movies." So she said, and this interview was like from February of 2009, and it was kind of talking about her upcoming role in Watchmen. So she's definitely talking about this movie. So she either didn't feel like any of this was over the top or gratuitous. So I don't think she would have necessarily gone for the some sort of modesty garment, you know, that they would have had to paint away.
Well,
so
I had a, honestly, when I made that joke on Discord, like, can I get a high? Everything did feel like you can't get a solid look. I wasn't sure if that's just a bit quality or it's just, it did feel like there was like almost, yeah, like the extra textured or something, both of them. But like, I want to push this theory of like, if the reason I'm uncomfortable and the reason in the sense that like, it feels like it doesn't feel like it's part of the movie is if this was a reshoot to like kind of up the sexuality, mm-hmm. where it's like the first 40 seconds of this film was the actual shot.
Mm.
And they just have them in a close up. You clearly know, all right, they're having sex, and then somewhere Dan's hand hits the fire button or something, and so that was it.
Digitally matched the lighting,
and you know, and then like, yeah, maybe Snyder and Warner Brothers were like, no, let's get like a little bit more, you know, let's get a little bit more crazy with it and stuff. Because I think, and also maybe because like they're not in a bed, so like usually when you see people having sex in the movie, there's like a bed sheet that gives you, like, you know, as Frank and Mac put it, and It's Always Sunny, and oh, it makes it classy. We use it with put the blanket over, and now it makes it classy. Where it's like there's not a class. Yeah. They're just going at it, yeah, in that chair, just the two of them.
The slow motion here also kind of adds to the weird and creepy sort of feeling of going through this thing 1 minute at a time. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't help here.
Yeah, you're like, it really, yeah, it starts, yeah, like, and yeah, it drags on because you're like, I know the speed of how people usually bang. You don't watch them, but at least, but there's a few websites you can look that up online, trust me. But like, you know, like there's a certain speed you expect, and the fact that it's like slowed down, yeah, it makes you, right, it's like an uncanniness to it. You're like, And then we haven't even talked about Hallelujah yet. Like, we haven't discussed it, but just like, yeah, that pace to like that song, you're like, all right, they're really milking this thing, huh?
Okay, I can definitely believe that in this early onset of intercourse that Lori is just taking it slow and going with those measured strokes, so to speak. A very slower, a much slower tempo, because she's in a situation where she needs to decompress from the high intensity situation she was just in. And so she just needs to ease into it and let things massage into place. Yeah. Do we want to talk about Leonard Cohen now? Since we just mentioned slow massaging into place, and now we can talk about Leonard Cohen. Leonard
Cohen. Real quick before we go there, and this is something that I've had in my notes or in my head like throughout the movie, but I never had a great place to talk about it because it wasn't necessarily relevant. It's the fact that Dan's cape, his Night Owl cape, is grommeted on the points, and I've never understood why. And you never see it really in any, you know, it shows up mostly in the Art of book, just like behind the scenes kind of photos or full frame, you know, head to toe kind of photos. And I don't know why his cape is grommeted at the points. And here, right before we started, I had this minute looping. And when his cape drops to the floor of Archie, you see one of the gold kind of bronze grommets in his cape as it's like next to his boot. And so I was kind of really excited that I finally have a chance or a reason to talk about his cape and the fact that it's grommeted. So it's weird because, you know, you don't hear the word grommet very often. So it feels weird to say it so many times. And if listeners aren't aware of what a grommet is, it's like when you have a tarp that has those reinforced metal rings in the corners, that's a grommet. So his cape has these, and I don't know why.
Probably for the same reason that tarps have them. He can take off the cape and then string it up in case he needs a impromptu covering.
Ah.
I mean, yeah,
he probably... Or if he needs to pitch a tent.
Yeah, boom. I mean,
well done, sir.
He's smart to keep it, like, able to be detached, so he, you know, like all those jokes in The Incredibles don't happen to him.
Mm. I assumed it was more practical as far as the production of the film. Like, this will tie, you know, this is how we're going to make his cape billow. We'll tie things off to these grommets, and then we'll just, you know. So I assumed it was purely function on the production side, and it's something that it's you're apparently it's only going to show up once in the film, so they didn't worry about hiding it, but. So that's something I've been saving. You could say that it's this pressure that's been building and building, and, you know, just finally I've had this release and I can talk about grommets, and here we are.
God bless, man.
Oh, I need a cigarette.
No better time to do it. So this is the original version of Hallelujah by Leonard Cohen. It's not the version that they used for Shrek. It's not one of the other 120 covers that have been used in other movies. It is the bona fide 1984 original.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And was this playing on? Do we believe this was actually playing on the radio in Archie?
That'd be a bold move, Cotton.
Well, I mean, it's just silence and you know, just like the upholstery just kind of squeaking.
Yeah, you're right. It feels like they do need music. I don't know.
I mean, not everybody needs music.
That's true. Yeah. Hmm. I don't have a lot of history with this song. To me, it was a song that I might have heard a few times, and then it definitely I remember hearing it in that god-awful Shrek movie. And then I feel like it's
the one that has that other great song. That was made for the Shrek movie?
Probably. I feel like every season of, you know, American Idol, someone sang this song in those early seasons when I actually did watch it, a little bit. So to me, it was just a song that I didn't have any real connection with. And so when I saw it in this movie, it didn't feel ridiculous because it didn't seem like, well, this is a weird choice. So I don't really have a problem with it here. I know this scene, the sex scene, it shows up on a lot of lists, you know, BuzzFeed lists or IO9 lists of, you know, weirdest sex scenes or weirdest or cringiest scenes in a comic book movie or worst comic book movie moments or worst sex scenes. So it shows up on a lot of this stuff, and a lot of it points to the song is playing at the same time of this, you know, uncomfortable, awkward sex that's happening. So I guess I understand where that comes from, but I think it's meant to be kind of ridiculous. And I think that, honestly, I think it's a song that's chosen kind of as a, what would be the weirdest song to pair with this moment?
I think the song's fine. It's the version, which wasn't Snyder's original choice either.
No?
He wanted Alison Krauss' version, and then apparently his friends, he quoted in the Boston Phoenix saying that, like, he showed it to his buddies, and they were like, wow, you really mean this? This love scene. And I guess he wanted it to be more, as you said, more ridiculous, maybe.
They didn't say that to him. They were like, just cut this by 40 seconds, dude. That's what they really said. They're like, we get it, man. We get it. Just get back to Rorschach.
No, but with the Alison Krauss version, the scene kind of works. It's nice.
All right, I got
to
listen.
Because it goes better with the buildup, like the slow undressing, and it doesn't seem as creepy.
Let me listen. I gotta give me a quick second here. Oh God, YouTube ads.
I'm throwing it in here. The song is very universal. As I mentioned, it's been covered, according to the Wikipedia page, over 300 times. But not just covered, like in other languages. I'm talking about Catalan, Czech, Danish, Dutch, obviously English, as the original was. It's been in Finnish. It's been in German. It's been in Hebrew. It's been in Hungarian, Icelandic, Japanese, Norwegian, Polish, Spanish, Swedish. Not to mention all of just the instrumental versions of it. The song is universal.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure where it's attributed to, but I'm pretty sure it's also lauded as like one of the best examples of a secular hymn.
Yeah.
I remember reading that. Well,
it's considered the baseline.
On guitar, I've played it a couple times between church and a church camp I attend. Well,
there's a whole episode of Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History that basically is just about this song. Mm. And like how Leonard Cohen's original didn't really amount to much until later it got picked up by someone else. What's his name? Something Cale.
Jeff Buckley?
No, actually, there was a step in between. John Cale happens to hear it, and then he covers it. He was in the Velvet Underground. And then Jeff Buckley covers it, and even his didn't really get picked up until he died.
Hmm.
And so then people went back to like Leonard Cohen's original, which Leonard Cohen's original has a creepier Leonard Cohen tone. But that's kind of why this song works, as Rick is saying. This song is universal because all the different covers take basically the same lyrics and can fit it to slightly different moods depending on what you want.
Yeah.
I mean, it fits in Shrek. It fits in it sort of fits in Watchmen and fits in so many other movies and has been covered American Idol, as one of you was just saying. So it works, but yeah, I don't know if this version's got some issues.
I got some stuff, but tomorrow. I'm just putting off to tomorrow at this point.
Yeah.
I'll throw this in real quick. I was listening to Pandora the other day because I don't listen to the radio, and it was a Christmas channel, and the Pentatonix cover of this song came on suddenly, and I looked at my phone and I was like, excuse you, this is not a Christmas song.
Yeah,
I know that we're recording this around the holidays and this song or this episode might come out around Christmas, but this is not a Christmas song. It is a generic, I guess, secular praise song, but there is nothing Christmassy about it, no matter what those five a cappella heads want to say about it. No, thank you.
Funny story. I was at this cafe near me getting some pork tacos because I'm like, I gotta do Watchmen tonight. I got these sex scenes. I gotta eat, and I gotta then do my notes on it. And it's funny. I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of like goofing off, looking at some comics. And on the radio, it plays the Bob Dylan "Times Are Changing." Mm. I go, and I literally went, "Well, the song of Bob Dylan means gotta go. I can't mope around here at this cafe any longer. Got to be hitting the old dusty trail."
Nice. So,
yeah.
Speaking of Bob Dylan, he covered this song in 1988.
As did Willie Nelson, Jeff Buckley, like we talked about, Rufus Wainwright.
Which countless... is the Shrek version, right?
What's that? Oh, is that
Wainwright the Shrek? Is Shrek version.
Oh, okay.
Katie Lang.
Countless American Idol or The Voice contestants. Justin Timberlake. And then the one that I watched when I originally did my notes for this that really like struck me was the Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton just days after Leonard Cohen's death. Yeah. And then after Hillary, you know, lost the presidential race to El Cheeto Face. So that was, I remember watching that and it, that was a really powerful performance. So,
Yeah.
Well, if we could, we can go back to Buckley in a minute here, if you would. But for Pentatonix, though, my take on that is, because I don't know much about him, but I'm looking at the article for him, and, you know, Wikipedia page, and it says genres, it says acapella, pop, R&B, soul, and then Christmas. Christmas as a genre. And is that why any song of theirs could be on the Christmas station?
You know, you can't just do that. And for another thing, my favorite things from The Sound of Music, also not a Christmas movie. Stop it.
So here's another thing. There's a duo called Jason and DeMarco that my church has had come and do a show every couple, 2 or 3 or 4 years, maybe. And they have a Christmas CD. They're a Christian duo singers. And they have a Christmas CD, and on it is Imagine.
What? That song is like the anti-Jesus song. Like, hey, imagine if Jesus wasn't a thing. Well, we wouldn't have Christmas then.
Of Christmas music, that almost seems okay. If you promote it like on a radio or on a playlist as a Christmas song, it seems wrong. But like you're filling out a CD, it's nice.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
All right, two more covers I want to mention. Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald covered this song. Probably sounded just like that. And also, Darby O'Gill did a cover of this song, which I'm sure sounded just amazing.
Hi-di-di-di-di.
Who?
Darby O'Gill.
Okay, sorry.
On his album, Irish Christmas Rollick.
Christmas.
On a Christmas song.
Goddamn Christmas. It's not a Christmas song.
It is if we make it one.
Well, you can throw Jingle Bells just about in behind anything. You could take Crazy Train, add Christmas bells. Oh, it's Christmas song.
Well, Jingle Bells isn't even a Christmas.
Yeah, what about Christmas? What about Jingle Bells directly references Christmas?
Nothing.
They should play the is it Michael Kamen music from Die Hard? All the Christmas music. But it's like done really dark and like foreboding. Oh, that's my kind of Christmas.
I say, you want to know a good Christmas album? Twisted Sister did a Christmas album. That thing is awesome. It's called Twisted Christmas. Go find it.
Okay, so like I said, back to Buckley. What I need to say about Buckley though is that is where on his album Grace, that's where I heard this song first. I don't think I had heard any other version or anything. It's back in the late 90s. And then just a few years later, then the next time I heard it on anything was still the same, that same version. Wasn't any other cover. It was on The West Wing. And apparently it was on like, I mean, that's where a ton of usage and media on the Wikipedia page for the song under Jeff Buckley's version, where Crossing Jordan, Without a Trace, The OC, House, Dirt, Criminal Minds, on and on and on.
And the Malcolm Gladwell podcast thing, he basically suggests that all the covers are really just covering Jeff Buckley's version.
Yeah, after I've read something, it might have been in that Wikipedia article about the song, and it says, after the song was used in the 2009 movie Watchmen, Leonard Cohen agreed that it needed a break. He told The Guardian, I was just reading a review of a movie called Watchmen that uses it, and the reviewer said, can we please have a moratorium on Hallelujah in movies and television shows? goes back to Leonard and he says, I kind of feel the same way. I think it's a good song, but I think too many people sing it.
Okay. Speaking of too many people singing it, every semester at the college where I work, the music department has a fundraiser and they call it the cabaret and all the kids get up and they sing something and they've roped me into hosting as the MC because, of course, that's just the kind of thing that I do. But after every single cabaret for the last several years, I guess, they have the kids have this little tradition. They get together around the piano while everyone's trying to break down the room so that we can go home and they sing this song. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, guys, give it a rest so I can leave.
Yeah.
Come on.
Sounds like a good place to maybe end this one.
Sure.
Anyone else have anything?
Just Malin Ackerman, the way she's leaning back at the end of this minute, she's doing a good job of displaying herself for our viewing pleasure.
Hmm. And that for probably
just
that
treating probably to the direction gaze. From
Snyder. Sure.
Yeah.
No, she deserves an award for this. Just being like, she's like, all right, I'm just going to fake it for all you. All you in the theater, damn it.
So, listeners, check us out on Twitter. We're at Watchmen Minute. You can find us on Instagram. Where else can they find us, Eric?
Oh, yeah. On our Facebook page, that's at facebook.com/Watchmen Minute. You can like us there and come in and talk with us in our group called the Crime Busters Listener Society.
And tell us their favorite rendition of Hallelujah.
There are plenty to choose from.
You like the yeah. bag too.
We'll have to have a poll. Just like yeah. Dan's. Okay, so that's wrapping us up. And until next time, who watches the Watchmen?
We do.
Watchmen are over.